I've met parents who have great ambitions for their children. In fact, they're hoping to shape child prodigies academically, musically, artistically, athletically. They spend time and money on camps and lessons and trainers. And there's nothing wrong with providing children these advantages. But what I want you to know is that you can do all that I've mentioned and more and still not fulfill a parent's purpose. As we learned yesterday, above all else, a parent's God-given responsibility is to teach their children obedience and respect. Left to themselves, a child will disobey and go his own way. A child needs to learn to honor and to obey, and they won't learn it from the world that we live in. It's a parent's purpose to teach them. We're studying here Ephesians 6, verses 1 through 4, God's principles for parents. And remember the acrostic that's serving as our outline for our studies here on parenting, PTA, a parent-teacher association. Our first session was on the P, on a parent's purpose. Our last session will be on the A, a parent's avoidances. But tonight we want to talk about the T, a parent's tools. Again, Ephesians 6, beginning in verse 1, reads, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth." And then he speaks to the parents, verse 4, "And to you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Again, a parent's purpose is to teach their children obedience and respect. You win a child's respect while insisting on their obedience. And according to Ephesians, you teach a child to obey by employing two tools, the training and the admonition of the Lord. Or to say it another way, correction and direction. Paul is saying to us here that godly parenting is a blend of both discipline and encouragement. It was Martin Luther who once said, "Spare the rod and spoil the child." That is true. "But beside the rod, keep an apple to give him when he has done well." In other words, to be a good parent, you need two tools. You need a means of disciplining rebellion and an incentive that encourages respect. In the words of Martin Luther, a rod and an apple. My second son, Nick, he was a great kid, but he was a kid nonetheless. And there were days when Nick, like all kids, would push our limits and test our boundaries. One such day, when Nick was about 5 years old, he had pushed and pushed and pushed me to the brink. Finally, I sent him to his room. Well, I went into the kitchen to fetch the dreaded wooden spoon. I was about to dish out some discipline when Nick looked up at me through some teary little eyes, watery eyes, and with a quivering little voice, he said, "Daddy, when you finish spanking me, will you give me a great big hug?" Oh, my. My heart melted. I mean, what an anger-diffusing, daddy-disarming, mercy-motivating comment for a child to make. And being the loving, compassionate father that I am, guess how I responded to my son? I said, "Nick, of course you know Daddy will give you a great big hug right after I give you the spanking that you've been deserving all day." Then I took that spoon and I applied the discipline that my child needed. For it takes both warm hugs and wooden spoons to properly and biblically raise a child. Ephesians 12, verse 7 insists that a wooden spoon is as sure a sign of a parent's love as a warm hug. Ephesians 12, "What son is there whom a father does not chasten?" According to Hebrews, the parent who only uses warm hugs and never employs a wooden spoon really doesn't love their child. Today, I want to talk about using both warm hugs and wooden spoons are the tools that are needed to teach your children obedience and respect. First, let's talk about the training of the Lord, the wooden spoon. The word in verse 4, translated training, is the Greek term paideia. It means to educate through discipline. There's a private school in the city of Atlanta called the Paideia School, and it's a fitting name. I know nothing about the school, but it's a fitting name. The key to disciplining your children correctly is to ask yourself the question, constantly ask this question, is the correction I've chosen providing a learning opportunity for my child? It should. For discipline should train, not torture. It should prepare, not punish. Proper discipline will accomplish at least three purposes. It will correct, it will protect, and it will perfect. First, proper discipline corrects a crooked course. It pulls back on the reins on a child who started to buck and kick and rebel. It checks and trumps wrong choices. Kathy and I had kids, four kids, who liked to assert their independence. And we always thought that was good. We would let go a little at a time, and they would learn to flap their wings and experience some independence. But if they got too far off course, it was our job to then step in and ground them and pull back on some of that rope. A parent has to be wise enough to recognize a wrong direction and then brave enough to put their foot down when it occurs. My job is to teach my kids that privilege and responsibility go hand in hand, and that you don't get the privilege without first accepting the responsibility. Here's a quote from a wise mother, Susanna Wesley. Her words are 200 years old, but they are timeless. In order to form the minds of children, the first thing to be done is to conquer the will and bring them to an obedient temper. To inform the understanding is a work of time and must with children proceed by slow degrees. But subjecting the will is a thing which must be done at once, and the sooner the better. For by neglecting timely correction, they will contract a stubbornness and obstinacy which is hardly ever conquered. Whenever a child is corrected, it must be conquered. Self-will is the root of all sin and misery. Once my three sons and I, we were walking across the football field after Nick's practice. Zach was about 15 at the time. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, coming out of nowhere, he looks over at me and he says, "Dad, why don't you take your glasses off and wrestle me? I think I can take you." And he really meant it. I mean, his brothers were shocked. Suddenly, the order and stability of their world was under threat. I said, "Oh, you think you can take me?" Took off my glasses, handed him to little Mac. And in 5 seconds, I had that guy on the ground in a full Nelson rubbing his little nose right in the dirt. He had underestimated the old man. The world was right again, though, for his two brothers. He had underestimated the old man, and I had corrected his attitude. Of course, it was all in fun, but trust me, there have been other struggles with my kids that were no fun at all. They were draining and agonizing. With both toddlers and teenagers, there are lots of wrestling matches. Attitude corrections are a constant occurrence. And your child needs a parent who can wrestle and win. If I have learned nothing else about child rearing, I know one thing. A parent better win the battles. Kids need to know who's boss and that it's not them. Good discipline corrects. But second, it also protects. You know, when my kids were tots, I would spank them for running out into the street and endangering their lives. It wasn't as much punitive as it was protective. I wanted them to view the street as a dangerous place, so I created an effective deterrent. My goal was to erect an invisible wall between them and the traffic. And when they became teenagers, I was still erecting walls to protect my children from harm. I found that a parent's job is to build moral and spiritual walls around our kids. See, every parent is a Nehemiah. You recall Nehemiah, he was the Jew who returned from Babylon to rebuild the demolished walls of Jerusalem. The previous wall lay in rubble. The city was a wasteland. For Jerusalem to prosper again, the city needed a new protective wall. And when I look at our society today, I see a Nehemiah-like situation. Morally, we are a wasteland. Spiritually, we're in ruins. Notions of truth and absolute values have been abandoned. Walls of right and wrong, true and false, have been torn down. And if our kids are going to spiritually thrive, let alone survive, we need to rebuild those walls of truth. Speaking of Nehemiah's efforts, we're told that he rebuilt the wall, and we're given an insightful verse. We're told in chapter 4, verse 13, where he stationed his guards. In essence, what part of the work he considered the most crucial. We're told, I positioned men behind the lower parts of the wall at the openings. In other words, Nehemiah's chief concern was the foundations and the openings. And this is where you as a parent should focus your discipline. Oppose any threat to your children's foundation, that is, their belief system. And watch at the openings, their exposure to the outside world. Be attentive to what they believe and what they receive. We need a parent. There we go. And this is an area where a parent not only battles the evil in the world, but also battles his own children. For you see, kids want to watch the hip movies and listen to the cool music. And tune in to popular TV shows, and they have unlimited access to the internet, even when they're accessing moral filth and spiritual garbage. Curiosity and peer pressure combine to produce a blindness. At times, they just don't see why we say no. It reminds me of the kids who wanted to see a movie of which Dad did not approve. They explained, they said, Dad, it only has 4 curse words, 1 sex scene, and some mild violence. But the special effects are incredible and the good guy wins in the end. Well, Dad still put his foot down. Later that night, Dad went into the kitchen to make some brownies. The aroma wafted through the house. Kids came running. But just before they took a bite, Dad told them, he said, guys, I just put a little bit of dog poop in with the brownie mix. It's not a lot. It shouldn't spoil the taste. They're still good brownies. But of course, no one ate. This wise dad wanted his kids to see the obvious, that if a little bit of poop makes the brownies inedible, why doesn't a little bit of filth in a movie make it unwatchable? Parents, it's up to us to just say no, to build walls for ourselves first and then for our kids. Hey, I don't go to R-rated movies. And while they were under my roof, neither did my kids. And did my teenagers always appreciate my standards? Not hardly. At least not at the time. You see, a parent loves their kids, yet at times they're hated for insisting on what's best for them. A mom and dad have to remind themselves that they're not running for re-election. The goal of every parent is not to be popular, but it's to grow healthy and godly kids. Don't forget that. You see, one day your kids will thank you for not standing idly by and letting them load their minds down with trash. It was Mark Twain who once said, when I was 16, I thought my dad was a fool. When I turned 21, I was amazed at what the old man had learned in 5 years. In the meantime, I have adopted Nehemiah's battle cry, chapter 4, verse 14, fight for your sons and for your daughters. Parenting involves a fight. Well, proper discipline, it corrects, it protects, but then third, it also perfects or it matures. And this kind of discipline begins in infancy. When you put off a feeding so that you stay on schedule, when you forbid a child from interrupting their parents' conversation, when you respond to a request with a not now and require of your children some patience. See, when you delay their gratification, it disciplines and builds character in that child. Pediatrician John Roseman, he once wrote, "A child isn't going to develop the strength of character to say no to things like drugs, alcohol, and sex in the absence of parents who themselves don't have strength to say no when the child whines for a new video game or the latest in stereo hardware or a new car." See, every child needs a parent with the guts to say no. It's been said children are like stomachs. They don't need everything we can afford to give them. A child develops self-discipline from parental discipline. Kids don't need to be overindulged and given everything they want. They need to learn how to suppress a desire at times, how to do without a whim, how to turn from a temptation, how to put a principle above a convenience. Proper discipline will correct, it will protect, and it will also perfect a child's character. See, for kids to grow into responsible adults, they have to learn that certain actions carry painful consequences. And when a parent disciplines, we allow that child to taste a healthy measure of those consequences. My discipline of my kids followed a three-pronged approach. First, I would give them a reason. Second, I would give them some rope. But then third, I would give them the rod. First, I would give them a reason. I would sit down with my kids and make sure I explain to them, to their understanding, the logic behind the law, the reason behind the rule. I tried to never follow my no with that stock parental excuse, "just because I told you so." You've heard that a time or two. That's often the way to cover up lame parenting. See, if a rule doesn't have a good reason behind it, then it probably needs to be discarded. Although sometimes the only reason I could ever offer my kids for saying no was a caution or an uneasiness from the Holy Spirit. Normally the activity would have been okay, but if I didn't have a peace from God, then my kids were taught that that was the best reason of all. Whenever a parent says no to a child, we should be able to provide them the reason and the logic behind our decision. And yet, let me warn you, your reason might not satisfy your child. Kids aren't always interested in logic. So, if they didn't accept the reason, then I would give them some rope. I would engineer a controlled crash. I would lift the parental safety net just enough to let my children taste a little of the uncomfortable consequences of their own actions. When they were old enough to understand my instructions and yet ignored them, then I made sure they suffered the consequences. If their shoes weren't on when it was time to go, after they had been told to put their shoes on, then they went in their socks. Several times my kids have come to church in their socks. If they ignored my advice and left without a jacket when it got cold, they had to bear it without a jacket. If they didn't eat their dinner, then they went to bed that night hungry. Trust me, a few minutes of cold or one night without dinner is not going to kill your kid. I didn't fight about it, but neither did I bail them out either. I just gave my kids some rope and allowed them to experience the natural consequences of their own actions. They had nobody to blame but themselves. Sometimes it takes a child experiencing the byproduct of disobeying the rules for that child to understand the reason that those rules were established. When my son Zach was a sophomore in high school, the one that's a pastor now, When he was a sophomore in high school, one day I came to pick him up after school. Well, when I opened the car door, rather than thank his dad for coming to pick him up, he immediately started complaining about me being 5 minutes late. I didn't get angry. I didn't act upset. I calmly tossed his book bag out onto the pavement, and I told him that he could walk the 3 miles home. Now, I secretly shadowed him most of the way, but he walked, and it made a definite impression on him. Believe it or not, he was suddenly far more grateful for his parents' efforts. Why argue when you can just give the child some rope? See, we learn best from our own bad decisions. But after giving your child a reason and then giving them some rope, if he or she still hasn't learned the lesson, or if the consequences of the violation are too severe, too painful to let them taste it themselves, then you need to manufacture some less painful consequences to get home the point. Say I tell a 6-year-old not to play in the street, and he disobeys. Well, I'm not going to sit back in the yard and let him get hit blindsided and then say, well, that'll teach him. Should have done what I told him to do. No, when the consequences are too severe to let my child taste them, then it's up to me to manufacture some less painful consequences, but consequences that are still going to get his attention. In the case of that 6-year-old, I would get him out of the street, and then I would spank him myself. I'll give him the rod. Parents, here are the 3 steps to good discipline: a reason, some rope, and then a rod. Now, if you ask me, Pastor Sandy, do you really believe that God wants us to spank our children? My answer is a very qualified yes. And I have for you 7 qualifications. First, never spank your child in anger. Never. Cool off before you apply the heat. Count to 10. Count to 10 again. Do whatever it takes to get control of your emotions first. Second, make sure you're spanking for the right reasons. You don't spank a child for simply being childish. That is, spilling a glass of milk or forgetting a chore. I mean, kids will be kids. And don't spank a child just because what he's done has become an inconvenience to you. That's no reason to spank a child. You only spank a child for a deliberate act of defiance. See, a parent's job is to curb and control rebellion, not crush a child's initiative. Well, a third qualification is you never spank a child on the face or on the arm or on the head or on the ears. That's not discipline, that's abuse. Note the genius of human anatomy. God created the human posterior with extra padding. That's right, with extra cushion. Thus, he identified it as the place to paddle. Spank your child where God put the extra padding. The rod is only for the rump. And then fourth, I tried to never spank my child with my hand. Always look for a neutral object. A leather belt at times, a wooden spoon. But when the scripture speaks of discipline, when it talks about spanking, it always speaks of the rod. You want your child to fear the rod, but to welcome your hands. When my children were due a spanking, I would often send them to their room. And then I would walk up there and I would pull off my belt and I would just hang it over the edge of the door. And then I would go downstairs to cool off or make a phone call or whatever I needed to do. And I'll tell you, those 15 minutes they had to spend looking at that belt, that usually did the trick. I mean, the spanking I ended up giving them was mild. I mean, it was really kind of barely tapping them. They got the message by staring at that belt for 15 minutes. Well, again, try not to spank your hand with your child with your hand. Look for the neutral object. The fifth consideration before you spank is to be consistent. Often parents get lazy in their discipline, and this is unfair to the child. See, the standard is always moving for your child. That's wrong. Don't just spank when it's convenient for you to do so, during commercials, or wait till halftime, son. You know, don't do that. Discipline should be with diligence. Act when the need arises. Six, always make sure that your child understands why he or she is being spanked. Remember the biblical definition of training. It's to educate through discipline. The education is important. And then seventh, make sure that the punishment fits the crime. It's been said, don't shoot a mosquito with a bazooka. Reserve the rod for what deserves the rod. The degree of pain you inflict on the child needs to be in proportion to the degree of the child's defiance. Now, but if you meet all those qualifications, then I absolutely believe that God wants us to spank our children. Proverbs 22, verse 15 is clear. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. Proverbs 13, verse 24 dares to say, he who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Real love will restrain his kids. Once a mom, she used a wooden board, a paddle, to spank her kids. She hung it up in the kitchen. And just below the board, there was a plaque. And the plaque read, I need thee every hour. But while growing up, the kids never knew if the plaque was referring to the Lord or to the board. After they became parents, they realized the answer was both. But here's a big question. What about teenagers? Should you spank a 13 or a 14-year-old? And I suppose you could try. But here's my observation about teenagers. By the time a kid turns 13, he's already hardened at both ends. The head and the fanny. So the rod no longer creates the desired effect. It bounces off rather than sinks in. The rod may no longer be an appropriate tool. But remember the reason for the rod. It's a substitute for the natural consequences of an act of defiance. So if you don't curb a child's rebellion with a rod, you'd better find another substitute that does the job. A form of discipline that manufactures enough pain to be a deterrent. Here's my advice. Find something that makes your child feel the consequences of their actions. In the case of a 16-year-old, the effect that pulling out the rod once had might now be duplicated by confiscating his car keys or taking his phone away from him or grounding him for the weekend. Bill Maher is a liberal commentator, and trust me, I agree with very few things that Bill Maher ever says, very few of his opinions. But he did make a comment once about fatherhood that resonated with me. He was once asked, were you and your dad good friends? Bill Maher replied, friends? We're friends now. But while growing up, I didn't need him to be my friend, but my dad. This idea of dads getting mushy and being friends is overblown. Dads are supposed to be the guy who tells you right from wrong. And I couldn't agree more. Listen, I want to be my children's friend, and today I am their friend. And I did all kinds of activities while they were growing up to cultivate their friendship. But at times, I had to realize a parent's place is in their kid's face. My kids will have lots of friends over the years who will tell them exactly what they want to hear, but they only have two parents who will put their foot down and insist on what's best for them. Thus, when it comes to training or disciplining your children, I suggest you take a three-pronged approach. Give them a reason, give them some rope, but then if needed, give them the rod. But along with the rod, please, please don't forget the apple. For along with the wooden spoon, we need some warm hugs. As Paul puts it, the admonition of the Lord. I'm convinced we often spank a child for doing wrong because we haven't given them enough praise for doing right. I mean, some kids draw more attention by getting into trouble than they do by being good. Yes, kids need the rod of correction, but even more so, they need the nod of approval. Over a lifetime, we'll have many, many critics. A child will have multiple critics. They need their parents to be their cheerleaders. When my kids go out to spar against the world, I want them to know that there's two people in their corner, mom and dad. We're on their team. I love the story of Derek Redmond. He ran the 400 meters for Great Britain in the Barcelona Olympics. Derek cruised to an early lead. It looked like he might coast to victory until he pulled up in pain. He tore an Achilles tendon and collapsed in the last 50 yards. But that's when something wonderful happened. His dad jumped out of the stands and ran onto the track. He grabbed Derek's arm and helped him cross the finish line. Derek didn't win that day, but he did fulfill a dream by finishing an Olympic race. And it was all thanks to his dad. See, the human tendency is to give up. It's to take the path of least resistance. Kids are prone to give up without a fight. They need to be taught that mountains can be climbed or leveled. They need their parents' encouragement. Notice Paul tells us in our text that we're to admonish our kids, but not just with simple encouragement, but with the admonition of the Lord. And that takes it up a notch. See, God's encouragement is inexhaustible. He looks over us with great pleasure. But to do so, he first has to overlook so much. He refuses to be embarrassed by our failures. God is determined and persistent not to let our sin sidetrack his love. Romans 8 is adamant. Nothing can separate us from the love of God. See, the apple that God uses to motivate his kids is unconditional love and acceptance. And that is the sweetest tasting apple you'll ever bite. And God wants us to extend that same love and acceptance to our kids. Love your kids with God's love. The famous painter of the 18th century, Benjamin West, once explained why he became an artist. One day his mom had left he and his sister Sally at home while she went to the market. While she was away, the kids found a bottle of ink and a pen, and Benjamin tried to paint his sister's portrait. He made such a mess. Spilt ink everywhere. The kids feared mom's reaction when she came home. But when Benjamin's mother walked into the house, she ignored the mess. She just picked up the drawing and she said, "Why, that's Sally." And then she planted a kiss on Benjamin's head. In the years that followed, Benjamin West would often say, "It was my mother's kiss that made me a painter." See, our kids need to be encouraged to pursue what's healthy, not just punished for pursuing what's harmful. I'm so thankful for my parents, who just like God overlooked my messes and recognized my God-given gifts and talents, and then provided me with the opportunities and the encouragement to develop those abilities. See, God fills our kids with boundless energy and ideas. Their parents' job is to channel it all in the right direction. I got another story of a not-so-famous painter. One day I came home from work and was met at the back door by my youngest son, Mac. He was 5 years old at the time. I'll never forget it. He grabbed me by the hand and he led me to the picture hanging from the magnet on the refrigerator. It was his masterpiece. Now realize, the faces were green, the sky was orange, the clouds were brown, the grass was red. But Mac was so proud of his picture. He was looking for my approval. And I made it such a big deal. I said, "Man, this picture is a fabulous piece of art. We can sell it for millions." After my rave review, a huge smile appeared on Mac's face, and I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, "Dad, I thought you'd say that." I was so glad he had become accustomed to my support. See, parents need to love their kids with an unconditional love. I didn't think I'd ever need to be reminded of that truth. We had such lovable babies. They cooed and they cuddled. Love just oozed out of their every pore. Oh, but it didn't take long for those same lovable kids to start turning up their nose and talking back. Ever heard of the terrible twos? The term was coined by a parent whose kid didn't live to three. For it only gets worse. The terrible twos give way to the defiant fives, then the sarcastic sevens, then the whiny nineties, and then the testy tens. And then they become teenagers, and your little babies are no longer cooing. Now they're bucking and kicking, and loving them becomes much more of an issue, trust me. By the time your kids have become teenagers, they've now been around long enough to embarrass you in front of your friends and to disappoint you. They've even made mean, ugly comments to your wife. They've lost a few of your tools, which really upsets you. Your teenage kids are not as lovable as they once were or as deserving of their parents' love. But you need to remember, they don't need it any less. Kids of all ages need that sweet-tasting apple to go right next to the rod. In verse 4 of our text here, the Greek word translated admonition, it means to direct a child's mind. And this is the vital role of a parent. See, God tells parents to steer their children's thinking in positive directions. It's a parent's responsibility to encourage his children to think about God, his ways and will, the life God enables. In essence, a parent is the captain on the deck of a child's thought life. A wise parent doesn't do the thinking for his child, but he does control the rudder. It's amazing. We'll be careful with our children's feet and with their hands. We don't let their feet wander off or let their hands grab things that don't belong to them. But we're not so diligent with our children's minds. It's been said, open lots and open minds gather trash. That's why you need to aim your child's mind in a positive direction, and it'll yield positive results. Like Nehemiah, be concerned about the openings. Not just to keep the enemy out, but to put the good stuff in. Give your children pleasant things to think about. That's the job of a parent. Deuteronomy 6 taught the Hebrews how to convey spiritual values to their kids. It says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." In other words, you teach your kids while you live life with them. As you walk through life's challenges and trials and disappointments and triumphs, you're always looking for the teachable moment. As you live out your faith, you apply spiritual values to practical issues and you share it with your kids. When you do that, all of life becomes a Bible study. The kid on the baseball team who loses his temper becomes an opportunity for you to talk about self-control. A peer's rejection is the springboard for a discussion on why your child's security needs to be in Christ, not in other people. Nervousness before a test is fertile ground to teach the power of prayer and the help of God's Spirit and the importance of studying every now and then. Read the Bible and pray with your kids, but do more than that. Apply the Bible to everyday stuff, for when you do, your kids will see that Jesus is real and that Christianity is for today. One Christmas, I'll never forget it now, a neighbor a few streets over had a nativity set in his yard. And it was so lifelike. It was complete with Mary and Joseph and the baby Jesus. And my kids were attracted to this nativity set, especially Natalie. She was just 3 years old at the time. Well, one night we were on our way home, and Nat wanted to go see baby Jesus. Well, it was late, and I was tired, and I just wanted to get home. And her older brother, Zach, always the pragmatist, explained to his sister that the baby was just plastic. That's not Jesus. But to Nat, that manger scene was so real. She just wanted to tell Jesus that she loved him. That's what she said. But when I tucked my daughter into bed that night, she was still crying because she couldn't go see baby Jesus. I had just settled into my chair when all of a sudden God pricked my heart. Man, I made a mistake. I'll never forget walking into her room, throwing a blanket over her, scooping her up in my arms. We went outside, and I drove her back over to that nativity set. And I'll never forget sitting in front man's front yard in his grass with my little girl talking together about how much she loved Jesus and I love Jesus. See, that night, since that night, I've tried to never miss a teachable moment with my kids. I like the old Scottish proverb, better felt than telt. When it comes to transferring our faith to our kids, applying a lesson, living a spiritual truth out in front of them is always more effective than merely hearing a sermon. I'll never forget my dad. He was an usher at our Baptist church that we went to, and we had a problem with some kids coming up and breaking into cars at night. One Sunday night, we were on our way home. My dad came in. He had chased one of the burglars. He had chased him across the parking lot, and he had chased him up through into the woods. Well, when the guy went up into the woods, my dad tripped over a stick or a rock or something, and he skinned his knee on the pavement, tore his knee out of his suit pants. And so he came in, he told the story, and I always said, Dad, what were you going to do with the guy if you caught him? He never answered. But I'll tell you, those torn pants taught me more about Christianity than a lot of Bible studies I've heard, a lot of sermons I listened to. It was a practical lesson. Here was a man that lived what he believed, and he wanted to do what was best for others, and he was protecting the church. I'm just telling you, when you live it out in front of your kids, that's what counts. That's where the faith gets transferred. Well, in closing tonight, a parent's purpose is to teach their kids obedience and respect. And we have two tools to do so, training or discipline, and admonition or encouragement. But maybe today the parent is the one who needs encouragement. You know, being a parent can take its toll. The job is not for the faint of heart. Maybe you've been in a fierce fight for your family, and quite frankly, you're worn out. You're tired of fighting the world. You're tired of even fighting your own kids. You've been giving it all you've got, but it seems that nobody appreciates your efforts. Let me tell you a funny story that I think provides you some encouragement, or at least it will one day. An incident occurred on the streets of East Hampton, New York, made headlines. A group of 11-year-old girls were together, and one of them was heard screaming, "Daddy, Daddy, please don't sing. Please don't sing." As a side note, this is a great tool for parents. If your child doesn't obey, threaten to sing. This is every child's worst nightmare, for dad to break off into a song. That's embarrassment that no child can survive. Even this little girl in East Hampton, New York. And yet it's ironic that 11-year-old girl was none other than the daughter of Billy Joel. Millions of people love to hear Billy Joel sing, but not his 11-year-old daughter. And here, to me, is great encouragement for parents. If Billy Joel's daughter doesn't appreciate her famous father singing, don't be surprised if your kids don't appreciate your parenting, at least not for the moment. I'm sure one day they'll see it different. They'll muster a thanks. You might even become their hero. But for now, just be faithful. Just be faithful. A parent's purpose is to teach your child obedience and respect. And it's done with two tools, the training and the admonition of the Lord, the rod and the apple.